Hello everyone and welcome back to the Esports Roundtable podcast, where we discuss the past, present and future of all things business and esports. We have a very special guest to speak about one of the most exciting projects that I've actually seen in esports for quite some time. As you guys know, the UK industry is relatively behind the rest of the European scene, and there's some really exciting regeneration projects that are going down in the London Docklands that have esports written all over it. To explore this in a little bit more detail, we've brought Ben Reed, the head of brand, on, who is responsible for all things brand for the Silvertown Partnership, which boasts a 5 million square foot development piece in London Docklands with a massive esports centre, which we'll be diving into in a little bit more detail. Ben, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing very well. So I'm really curious to mine into your vision for the Silvertown project as a whole, how the various bodies actually came together, how esports even came into the agenda, and what this project might be looking like. But before we get stuck into that, why don't you just tell everyone a little bit more about yourself, your story, how you got to where you are now, and your history as a gamer in your personal life.
Yeah, so I don't know how many people you speak to that were born in the mid to late 70s.
Quite a few.
It sounds like a long time ago, but I was born in 1977. So our first kind of exposure to any sort of gaming was on a Nintendo handheld console playing Donkey Kong.
Nice.
So that was mid-80s, and that was kind of like my older brothers had it, and you'd kind of nick it from them and try and kind of complete them and beat their scores. And then I spent far too much time with a Game Boy, which annoyingly I can't find. It's somewhere in one of our family houses in the loft, and I can't find it anywhere because I want to get it back. So I spent a lot of time on the Game Boy, and I think it all changed then when we had an Amiga as a Christmas present. We played the Amiga 500. Do you remember that?
That was before my time, I'm afraid, mate.
You can buy them. You can still buy them. And as a game, I don't know, there was a company, I don't know if they still exist, called Bulldog Productions, and sort of company that now would be bought by somebody like Tencent. And they had a strategy game called Syndicate, which was really way ahead of its time, so I spent a lot of time on that. And then it really changed in a working capacity where nobody really did any work because they were too busy playing Doom on multiplayer mode. And even in Shoreditch, four or five years ago, people were playing Doom, mix of Doom and FIFA. And then back in the day, we used to play a lot of Sonic the Hedgehog as well. And I really am not very good, but my biggest and earliest achievement was completing a game called Zelda Ocarina of Time. Excellent. On the Nintendo 64, which I had the book that helped me get through some of the levels. It was bloody difficult. And then another game called James Bond GoldenEye, which was one of the ones I really loved. I then had a Xbox that I didn't use. I don't know why I didn't use it. I just didn't really like it. And played a lot on my mobile. So I've switched to Android last year, which is the best thing I've ever done. But I was playing a lot of Clash of Clans. And then a couple of years ago, I met a gaming team who you know, Fnatic, in Shoreditch.
Sure.
And I started playing a controversial game, so Blizzard's Overwatch. And even though I'd kind of only last about a minute, I used to play a character called Widowmaker.
Yep.
And then I go in kind of a few months ago, and then they don't have an Overwatch team anymore. So it's like, who is the team? And obviously now it's the London team is Cloud9. So that's my kind of gaming overview, and I've been to a couple of esports events. I went to a CSGO event, which I quite like, the spectator side and the beer side and the fun side, which is run by ESL.
Okay.
And having been to an event before Christmas about blockchain and cryptocurrency, I'm waiting for a game called Reality Clash to come out, which is something I've never seen before. So it's a augmented reality combat game. For the iPhone and the Android, actually, that you can play in your everyday life when you're on the bus, on the train, or on the tube or something, and you can compete against other humans in a shoot 'em up type game. So I'm looking forward to that being launched, and a lot of it is being funded through cryptocurrency and Ethereum. So I think that's going to be quite big.
Interesting. Yeah, I haven't seen too many areas where crypto and gaming has come together in a way that really excites me yet. There are a bunch of esports organizations that are launching their own ICOs, And I've kind of explored Light and Bitcoin a little bit on the side as well. But I'm quite curious. Whenever I speak to anyone from my parents' generation, they're always exceptionally cautious. They think it sounds like a pyramid scheme. And when you speak to people of my own age, they normally see, just because the ebb and flow is so predictable, there's actually like an easy way for people to make a bit of money, even if they're sat on the toilet. So it's pretty high risk.
I was going to announce on Twitter that I've made $1 investing into cryptocurrency. I've made $1 because we're all about a year too late. And so it's a profit. And then tomorrow it might go up by 20%. It might go down by 20%. But I think it's a little bit too late unless you're being really kind of switched on with it and have a trading type background.
Yeah, if you go with like an app like eToro, it's supposed to be, there's a lot more emergent cryptocurrencies on there that I know that some people are playing around with. But yeah, I completely agree that the golden days for taking advantage of that have probably moved forward. Let's jump back to the topic at hand, which is the Silvertown partnership. How did you get in the position to be leading everything from the brand side and actually bringing on the various partners to get stuck in with the project? And also just tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so I was running an agency, typical kind of marketing event agency, and not often do you get a chance, I was kind of headhunted, but not often do you get a chance to have an influence on a piece of London because it's so complex with landlords and different developers and landowners. And I was contacted by a property developer. My first reaction was, oh God, no thank you. When I found out a little bit more about the project, I fell in love with it. And essentially it's an area in East London, so right opposite Comic-Con when that's at the Excel Centre. Mm-hmm. And when you get a little boat along the Royal Docks, there's a building there called Millennium Mills. Londoners that I speak to, probably 50% of them have been to Silvertown, 50% haven't. So part of my job is to build awareness for this place. And then it also became a bit of an iconic location for filming. So Stanley Kubrick chose a lot of his backdrops for the film Full Metal Jacket to be at Silvertown. We had a film called Brazil by Terry Gilliam, who went on to do amazing things. The television series there, obviously Paddington 2 was there. So it's been used creatively and culturally a lot, but it's been derelict since about 1980.
Okay.
So developers have come along, they've pitched ideas like aquariums, funding's fallen through, recessions have happened. And now, kind of the last piece of the jigsaw puzzle, when you go to areas, especially mixing with the gaming community, and you go to areas like East Berlin, some of the stuff happening in Lisbon and Williamsburg, Hamburg even becoming a crazy pub. So we're really trying to just build it into a place that actually people genuinely want to spend time in that isn't overly managed. So property companies employ a management company where you can't skateboard, and you know, some places in London that really reject kind of cultures and subcultures. So we're creating, and part of the reason I jumped across to do this project is so that I can influence a place where we all want to go and have a drink and spend time in, and more importantly, is affordable. So you can actually afford to live there and work there, meet your partner there, and create this community that I think London needs. I think we've over-managed. So my job is really to make it an area that is a place we want to go to. And what's current and what's new and what doesn't London, and I think you mentioned it, Joe, what is London being overlooked for when it shouldn't really be? Things like music, things like esports are two of the biggest things that I think we need to do better in London. We've got about 20 music venues closing down in the next year. Wow. Because of business rates and how they were classified and the affordability. So we're losing some of the creative fabric that we were famous for. And I'll come on to brands in a minute, but some of the brands that I've met in the last 3 years aren't looking at London because they think we're relatively immature, they don't think we've got the right footfall, and they're investing their 100 million funds into places like Las Vegas and to other areas in the States and even in Europe. So part of the reason we're having a chat as well is to look at how we grow esports, and we're members of the trade body UK, and how we work with the community to make relevant products that people will actually, when I say products, I mean buildings, essentially we're builders, but relevant products that people actually will visit.
Sure.
To make the sector stronger.
Yeah, it's an absolutely massive undertaking. There's so many points that you've crossed over that I'd love to kind of spend a little bit of time on. I mean, this podcast, it goes out to a truly global audience, so I don't want to kind of mine down into the intricacies of how London has been changing, but I remember Brick Lane's kind of late night cultural scene being completely stripped down. Mm. So the vision for the project sounds like you want to build an organic, fun place that kind of is a harmonization of a bunch of different subcultures without much control. You've shown me a sample deck of kind of the differences between, you know, what certain properties might be looking like. And it looks like they're going to have absolutely full ownership over kind of where they want to build and actually having like a very interesting blend of businesses. Would you be able to kind of elaborate on the mentality behind that, how it's going to work with kind of having a complete hands-off approach when you're actually going to be including some residential areas as well? Because that, you know, there's obviously some form of clash between that, right?
Yeah, good question. So we're building around 3,000 homes, maybe more. So then you get into a point where if you're living there and you've got your post office and you've got your village green, what are you actually going to do there? Commute to Canary Wharf? Probably not. Are you going to go to Tottenham Court Road, which is only 15 minutes away on the new line, across the rail line? Maybe. So part of our challenge is how do we provide services and leisure and stuff to do for people that are living there, and also get everybody from the other side of the dock and also from Central London to come and visit us as a destination. So we spent a lot of time planning what does the residential look like. We also have commercial space. So if we had a huge co-working space for the gaming community and esports community where they pay not £500, £600 a desk per month, but they pay £200 a desk a month. How does that work, and would it be successful? And obviously, we need to make this commercially viable and make some money along the way. And although we can offer incentives, some of the bigger brands involved in global offices, so some of the people like Amazon who have a new office, Google moving to King's Cross, we do need some of the tech brands to help prop things up a little bit and create that community. Is that a Tencent? Is that an Alibaba? We don't know. But part of the ethos is, if you are Alibaba, or if you're, say, you're a fairly dry business, the whole of the offering has to fit with our brand values. So one of the most important things about our brand values is consumer-facing. So we think that if you're running a company like a Nickelodeon or a DreamWorks, why shouldn't you have consumers coming in to experience your brand and meet the maker? Sure. Why shouldn't you speak to somebody that was involved in post-production? So we feel that there's an opportunity. We're seeing it happening in places like New York, Tokyo, Shanghai. Why wouldn't you create almost like a brand embassy where you have a B2B offering, so you have co-working space, you have your bar, restaurant-type cafe, but you can also let consumers into a showroom or almost like an education zone on the ground floor. So people like Tesla, the car brand, do this really well. People like Dyson, the tech brand, do this really well. Mm. Microsoft are opening up a new flagship store in the center of London, so Oxford Circus, the West End. So we feel that some brands are doing more of it. People like Samsung are doing this in New York, where it's not about price tags and about closing down sales and only £9.99 today. It's more about the education. So we're happy to speak to any brand that wants to be outwardly facing from an education point of view and an experiential point of view. It just so happens that some of those brands are also involved, well, will also be involved within the esports ecosystem. So we're not just talking about esports and not just talking about a large music venue. We're also talking about other brands that want to be kind of part of this community.
So it's more of a overall experiential hub, which is a massive priority for many industries at the moment. I mean, for the start of this year, I've had a lot of communication with those that are working in the sports industry and why they're so keen to learn more about esports and how that can kind of elevate their proposition. But there's just been an absolutely massive shift over the last few years of organizations wanting to put on these very high value, like, how can you actually give value to the consumer as a whole, not just to get them into actually get their cash, but if you provide them with a memorable experience, that's going to do a hell of a lot more to align the average Joe to your brand and actually make you memorable in a consumer market where everyone's making noise, where there's thousands of touch points on a daily basis, be it online or offline. So it makes a lot of sense.
And we've seen other people wanting to use tactics to get an audience through a door into a shopping center to make footfall numbers look good. So we feel that we don't want to use this as a gimmick or a tactic. We genuinely want to be famous for creating stuff here, so creating content here, running a decent league here, having great gaming esports teams here, facilities for those guys training children on esports after school. We're in the borough of Newham, so training children on the education of esports and the improvement to your kind of learning and application. So we actually want the authenticity of the place, which is always something that we did. Silverton's always been an authentic, gritty urban location. So we don't have a 2-year plan to make esports create a new audience. It's going to be a long term plan where we're hopefully going to be a global alternative to some of the stuff happening in Vegas, but better, where everybody wants to descend on to spend time.
So let's mine down into the esports stuff specifically. Why don't you just tell us a little bit more about the way you see the esports organizations plugging in? You've shown me some graphics of the mill, and that would be all like potentially all branded by the likes of a Twitch or a team or a bunch of periphery agencies as well with an arena involved. So why don't you just tell me a little bit more about the esports specific projects and where you see the true value to actually bringing a online community into a physical space for parts of the industry that aren't just event specific. We want one of the biggest things in the UK scene is a very strong lack of ecosystem, and there's a lack of tangible places for the esports community to really come together. I think a lot of the esports and gaming bars are great, but there's far too few of them, and in terms of the events they put on, they're a little bit too regular and not innovative enough for me to really see a great amount of people actually getting really excited. So what kind of ideas do you have for cross-partisan cooperation if you can get all of these parties in the same building?
Yeah, so firstly, for 2 years, we did nothing but listen. So every meeting I had with any brand, whether it was Mercedes, Audi, I don't know, ESL, what else have we got here, WeWork, Philips, Samsung, after every meeting I said, would you like to be next to your competitors or other people in the supply chain? And so some people within the car industry said, no, we don't want to be next to Audi. We want to be next to other brands. So we were thinking, well, we won't put you together, because we quite like creating clusters of like-minded people and brands. So we quickly learned that very few sectors want to be together, because they are fiercely competitive. Fashion, for example, they wouldn't have their Gucci wouldn't share facilities with Yves Saint Laurent because it's highly sensitive information, etc., etc. So we stumbled upon gaming and esports because the first sort of 10 meetings, everybody said, "Yeah, we'd like that. We'd like to be next to Twitch, or we'd like to be next to Faceit, even next to other teams." So first of all, we were like a bit of a light bulb moment where we said, "Well, they don't mind. They want to be in the same building, which means they get the efficiencies of sharing space." And when you look at this, almost the supply chain of hardware manufacturer, sponsor, arena operator, and then the facilities, back of house, like some of the events I went to, I couldn't understand why they were rigging and de-rigging amazing technology and screens and seating for a 2-3 day event. And then I realized how good some of the guys are at the production side. So we started to build a picture of who would be our 20 people in the building. And now my kind of head's thinking, who would be the 12 people in the building? Because there are fallouts. We're facilitators, so we just listen to what people tell us. And we'll come on to the thing that we're hoping to outreach to your listeners about, which is building a couple of esports hubs. And then you say, okay, so if we do have 12 brands, what are they doing? Which leagues are they operating? And how are they going to input into this community? And so we purposely haven't made any commitments on who these occupiers are. We've got about 10 people that we're speaking to quite seriously. One is entering a contractual stage. And we thought, before we do this, let's ask a wider remit of people, what does this building look like? Is it a series of buildings? Do people want to go to the new Tottenham Spurs stadium and be around there? Or do they actually want something that's genuinely purpose-built? So some of the questions we ask ourselves, and we think this building needs, for example, it might be more developer and publisher-focused than it is consumer-focused.
Okay.
But we certainly think there's a market, and whether this is one of them, two of them, or ten of them, we think that London especially needs a co-working space where people can come along and rock up and work and network. We feel that London needs a bar and a meeting place for the community that isn't just a soulless kind of a bar somewhere else. We feel that we could also add broadcast space, retail space. We think that an arena is interesting. How big that is, we've debated for a year. Is it 400? Is it 1,000 people? Do we do 10,000 people? We see that the vast majority of events actually have smaller audiences, so how, and you know, we can maintain that buzz and excitement for a smaller audience.
Yeah, it's
so
more about who's at home, right? Yeah.
Sorry?
It's more about who's at home than who's in the arena. Like you can, like you can very easily overpack or underpack a live audience. But please go on.
And then, so then you've got the leagues, teams, operators, the power shift to now, and I think it's, I might be talking out of turn, but I think it's a bit of a shame that the traditional sports model seems to be creeping in to esports as well. Because when I first started learning and joining this journey, it was more about an operator running multiple IP and titles. And now it seems that the franchise model is kind of quite expensive, not successful yet, but maybe growing. So all of these questions hit a full stop point where we say, well, let's reach out. And if I get a call from McDonald's, do they go in? If I get a call from Honest Burger, do they go into this kind of ecosystem? And we start to narrow down the ones that are going to make this building really special and stand out. And also the size of it. So we build buildings that we've done various campus buildings around London. One was called Chiswick Park, Broadgate Circus. People may know just by Liverpool Street. We're used to doing really big buildings that house lots of functions. So how big is this thing? And we think it can be actually pretty substantial. And then it's how you divide the parts. And we have drawings, we have architectural drawings, but we thought that we need to spend the next couple of months refining those.
Makes a lot of sense. It's very, very exciting. And I think that the space as a whole is really starting to elevate itself with the centralization of resources that you're even getting at team level. You mentioned franchising. You're starting to see many of these teams that have the sports backing that are really starting to build an almost 360 set of business units around themselves to service not just their core teams, but actually elevate the space as a whole. So one thing that we've mentioned here before is that Looking for Group and the Esports Roundtable podcast is invested in by Infinite, who are the organization that have a controlling interest in Optic Gaming. Through working with this organization and seeing their kind of vision for the various satellite companies that they have underneath their umbrella and the arenas and the facilities that everyone's looking to put on, not just in Texas, but in around all of these major teams. I mean, Team Liquid have done a fantastic YouTube series on their cross-game working space, where moving away from the time of gamer houses where the kind of life-work balance for these pros is awful, and actually moving towards a more professional and healthy way for these pros to maximise their time in a space without becoming a kind of shape of the former self. So it's not just the premise of Silvertown that's really exciting. It's the fact that this idea is already in practice, maybe at a slightly smaller scale, in all of these major esports centres around the various franchising organisations. It's very important for this kind of industry to be able to bring a local community around itself and actually provide them with a place, an experience, a space for them to really come together. And the only place that's really done it well in London, to my mind, is Fnatic's Bunker and some of the Gfinity events, you know. But the Gfinity arena is pretty much event specific, at least at the Bunker, which is again one of the first of its kind, had these front-facing consumer events as well. So it's a very interesting time. I think that with the combination of the right parties, that this could be absolutely monumental for the UK esports scene. And I think with the insight that I've got into a few other projects that are going on at the education level, I mean, next week's episode will be with the head of education from Yuki, who has been responsible for putting the national esports tournament together, which has 20 schools participating. It's an awesome way to inspire future UK students to maybe think about esports as a proper option. You've got amazing stuff being done with a benchmark sport and the a Bucks University ecosystem, which I've mentioned here multiple times before. And as you mentioned earlier, Cloud9 and being based in London, and Code Red Esports looking after all of their operations. Red Eye has been in the industry for since its birth, basically, and there's a massive onus on his partnership to really start providing the pillars of entry and the wider community for amateur, semi-pro and pro esports around Overwatch as well. So it's very well timed, and it's a very smart use of the space in my mind. So tell me a little bit more about the outreach that you're looking to do with the community. Just take us through that journey in a little bit more detail, and yeah, we'll see what the listeners think, I guess.
Sure. So quoting, we've had a huge amount of help from Yuki as well, a guy called Andy Payne as well in that business. But Yuki kind of helped us in a way by publishing their white paper, which we found really helpful. Okay. As a relatively sort of relative novice in the sector, and we just want to get, so we know that the UK has a concentration of businesses in this ecosystem that are in various parts of the country, some because it's affordable, some because that's where they started or they own the building where they're in, but we just want to get a view and some guidance on some of the thinking that we're doing, and whether that, almost a sanity check of whether it's right or not. And it's shoot from the cuff. Do you think we should be doing one in addition to London, in places like Bristol and Brighton? Do we think that these hubs are going to be more consumer-based? It's going to be more of a bar kind of leisure offering? Or do we see there as a serious business case for there to be a large co-working hub? So they're all, you and I meet in coffee shops and things. Is there, and WeWork now valued at $20 billion. We feel that co-working should be more specialist. Okay. We're working with some brands that are building music tech hubs, that everybody sharing their kind of ideas are all based around music and technology. So we think that esports tech or gaming tech will grow. And we're just basically asking just 10 questions to say, what is it and where do we put this? And London is, we know, is kind of everybody gravitates towards, but there are other locations as well. And there's some amazing stuff happening in other cities outside of the London offer. And my kind of imprint and what I want to achieve over the next 20 years is that we create a network of these facilities where people can literally plug and play, rock up, and it will be the default place to go to. That, four or five of these are happening in Vegas. These are not exactly the same as ours, but a destination for esports fans. I think people are traveling up to 6 hours to get to these places in Vegas. But we want to do it better than Vegas because we've got the three key ingredients. We've got businesses that already do it. We've got a really good established legal and regulatory framework in the UK. And seeing Matt Hancock, the digital MP, now being promoted to do bigger and better across the whole music culture and digital piece is really positive, because I think he's really forward thinking. Others might disagree, but I think he's pretty sound. For a politician. So we've got the legal framework. We've got a load of concentration of businesses doing really interesting stuff within video gaming and traditional entertainment. And we feel that we've also got skills on our doorstep. So we've already got an education and skills need. We want to create 21,000 new jobs at Silvertown. And these buildings aren't just fancy to look at and hopefully making some money, but they're also a huge facilitator for skills and job creation. So we've got all of the ingredients, and now it's a kind of, we've got to sort of 70% of packaging and actually how this thing looks. And do we want to build a traditional arena like some of the other ones in the UK, built by an arena specialist? probably not. We want to do things slightly differently. And now we want to get across the line and get to 80-90% of the thinking with a little bit of help from people that are passionate about this industry.
Okay, cool. So, guys and girls, the link for the short survey will be in the description of the podcast. Please do go out and put your thoughts in. I'll definitely be doing that as well. For those of you that are in my LinkedIn network that are working in the esports industry or in sport, I'll also be plastering this out over social media as well. One of the biggest personal aims for me being involved in esports as a whole is to see the UK scene start to reach its potential and be taken seriously. And it's this kind of project and any others that I've mentioned earlier on across all facets and all levels of the space. And I think that with these being put in motion, that hopefully we will see some UK teams or some UK businesses really starting to fly and dominate in the space. Heavens know that the North American teams aren't going to beat South Korea. I think it's our turn. So in the next few years, British esports is going to come out swinging. I really hope so. Ben, we've got one final question for you. It's going to be a bit of a curveball, I'm afraid, because I know that you are a massive music fan. And I am pretty obsessed about trying to find new stuff, old stuff, and just anything from any genre and just understand a little bit more about where it comes from. So to replace our fun recurring segment, I'm going to ask you if you could bring any dream partnership between sports, between esports and music into the Silvertown project, regardless of budget, regardless of who you had access to, regardless of timing in the schedule, what would you want to do and why?
I know they exist, but I'd quite like to run a festival that has esports and music in equal parts of 50-50.
Very cool.
That isn't a festival that's sponsored by a Red Bull or a Jägermeister.
Okay.
But is a genuinely kind of authentic gathering and features great new music. I'm just going to drop in what I was going to say, which I was listening earlier to a band called Japanese Breakfast. I don't know if anybody's heard of them, but work to their new album is amazing. But
nurturing stuff, is it?
It's a bit of a mix, actually. It's quite good to work to because you kind of can switch up a little bit, but it's a little bit dancey.
Okay.
It's called Soft Sounds from Another Planet.
Okay.
So I'd like to run a festival that is really progressive brands. And the other part of the question as well was a London team winning a massive competition in a big London or Brighton or Bristol or Manchester hub, where we're walking across, getting a free drink and being proud that we grew the industry and become almost a centre of excellence for esports. So when I meet Mr. Smith from a global brand, we're up there in the top three for investment and opportunities.
Awesome. It's a great answer. I would love to see how that would come together. We've actually seen a few examples of this already. Multiplay had a partnership with Universal Music. They had two or three relatively well-known bands playing at the NEC in Birmingham. And I know that Riot Games did a League Fest where they had some live music being performed, but that was a lot more on brand with League of Legends. So they have like a bunch of new songs that they came out that would be playing at the events, and they would perform those live and get some of the players who thought they had some singing talent to go on stage, which was quite painful to watch. But at least they tried anyway. It's an absolutely great idea, and I like to see those kind of very specifically millennial lifestyle events being put together.
Right.
Ben, we've smashed up against the wall for time for this episode, so thank you very much for coming on. I really hope that the audience has learned a little bit more about the projects, and also through your comparison with what's happening in North America, maybe portraying that the UK and Europe in terms of investment isn't super far behind. At least we're thinking along the same lines to make ourselves stand out and actually compete from a wider business perspective in esports. Where can everyone reach you if they want to get in touch? Obviously, they're going to be sending you their thoughts by the survey, but any social media or mail addresses that you want to...
LinkedIn would be great. And I can imagine the reaction of even property people are thinking about esports. Well, we've been on this journey for 3 years. We haven't just, if we were cryptocurrency, we would have made quite a lot of money by now. We started this, in 2014, 2015. So we'd like to think we're not just jumping on the bandwagon. We're trying to do things properly. But through LinkedIn, Benjamin Reed, REED, you'll find me on there. Look forward to hearing from you.
Awesome. Well, guys and girls, thank you very much for your time. It's actually quite an auspicious episode for us to be talking about surveys. We're running a survey to see how we can actually improve the podcast, what you want from us, where you want to see us, and that'll be all tied in with a giveaway that we're still working out. Stay tuned for that. That'll be all over our social media channels. If you want to reach out to me, I'm at Barely Qualified on Twitter. If you want to reach out to us on Facebook, it's LFG Esports HR. All right, guys, I'll speak to you soon. All the best.